This episode is brought to you in collaboration with Solku, a mother-owned jewelry brand celebrating all of life's seasons and occasions. Enjoy 35% off your order now until June 30th with promo code FEMINISTBC at Solku.com. Welcome back to the Feminist Book Club podcast, a show for dangerous, well-read women. Each week, we explore literature and media through a feminist lens as one small way to reclaim our time, our books, and our stories. Let's get started. Hey there, everyone. I'm Renee Powers, and I am so excited to bring you today's episode. But first, a few announcements and reminders. Make sure you check out the show notes and our Instagram for details to enter our surprise giveaway. We have teamed up with Molara Brands to give away some of our favorite woman-owned products in celebration of strong women everywhere. We needed a little pick-me-up, so we're giving it all to you. One winner will receive Molara's signature t-shirt that says Strong Women, Strong World. Plus, we at Feminist Book Club will include a copy of The Stars and the Blackness Between Them by Junauda Petrus, a deck of Literary Witches oracle cards, vegan banana bread mix from Vixt Baking Company, Go Silly reusable silicone straws, and our exclusive Patriarchy is Exhausting eye mask. All of the details to enter the giveaway are in the show notes and on all of our social media everywhere. So Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, you can find it if you're looking for it. The giveaway is open worldwide and it ends on April 22nd. Just help us share some love. Tag your friends if you think that they might like a t-shirt and some really cool, geeky, woman-owned stuff. Next up, I have some reveals to share for our next Feminist Book Club box. As you know, Feminist Book Club box is a monthly subscription box that pairs feminist reads with products from women and queer-owned businesses, and our May box is going to be dope. It's so good. Our theme for the month is parenthood, and our May subscribers voted on the book. They will receive a copy of one of our favorite books, Good Talk, a memoir in conversation by Mira Jacob. We had Mira on the show a while back, so I'll link that in the show notes as well. The show notes are going to be super full of all sorts of stuff, so make sure you check those out. This is a graphic memoir, but if that's a format you're maybe not as familiar with or not as comfortable with, this is an excellent way to just dip your toes into that format. In our discussion group, one of our members mentioned that they're not really a fan of graphic novels, but I brought up that it's like once you get the hang of reading it, you hardly remember that it's a graphic novel. It's kind of like when I watched the movie Parasite, I kind of forgot about 10 minutes into it that I was reading subtitles because you're just so immersed in it. Good Talk has a really similar cinematic quality to it that will be a really nice change of pace for your reading life, I think. So again, our book of the month for May is Mira Jacob's graphic memoir, Good Talk. And now the first item that members will receive in their May boxes as well is a Howlite necklace from the company Solku. I love this company. They're a woman-owned jewelry brand celebrating all of life's seasons and occasions with a beautiful selection of authentic gemstone necklaces, earrings, and bracelets. Each piece of jewelry is handcrafted and signed by the community of stay-at-home moms. And a percentage of sales is donated to different nonprofits that share their values of and ideals of empowerment. So our May subscribers will be receiving their Soulful of Light Howlite necklace, which is infused with love and helps to facilitate the energies of patience and communication, perfect especially for parents right now. The folks at Solku have generously extended a discount code for us too, so enjoy 35% off your Solku purchase now through June 30th with promo code FEMINISTBC, BC as in book club, and you can use that at solku.com, that's S-O-U-L-K-U.com. So there you have it. The May Book of the Month again is Good Talk by Mira Jacob. And our first item that we're sharing is a delicate Howlite necklace. This thing is perfect for everyday wear. It's one of those pieces that you could put on, wear with anything. You can feel good about wearing it because of its social impact. Plus the packaging, I know you're going to throw it out, but when you receive it, it's just too darn cute. We will reveal our second item in next week's podcast, but if you already know that you want to join us for May, you can sign up at feministbookclub.com/shop and be sure to use code PODCAST for your listener exclusive discount. Today's guest is the one and only Candace Bushnell. Yes, that Candace Bushnell. I have to tell you, I was super nervous and so excited to talk to her. And of course, this was the time that my computer was totally out of commission when we recorded this. So unfortunately, we had to record both of us on a single audio track. So what that means is you will hear all my unedited vocal cues and annoying reactions. Things like, and yeah, and oh, and stuff that I cut because it's awkward and cringy and nobody wants to listen to those kinds of vocal cues. But unfortunately, this time we couldn't remove them. So hang in there. It's worth it for Candace. And I'm so sorry about that. But I got to meet her poodle on video chat. And so that made it almost worth it for me. Sorry, I couldn't share this poodle experience with you. Regardless, Candace was such a delight, and we chat about all sorts of things, from her own feminist awakening, how she's seen the feminist movement shift and grow, and what it's like co-writing a book, and so much more. A quick content warning for you, we do discuss sexual assault as it relates to her new book, so please take care of yourself as you listen. And now, I am so thrilled to share with you my conversation with Candace Bushnell. Hi, everyone. Welcome back today. I am so excited. I'm sitting down with Candace Bushnell. Candace is the critically acclaimed international best-selling author of 10 books, including, you've heard of it, Sex and the City. There's Still Sex and the City, Summer and the City, The Carrie Diaries, One Fifth Avenue, Lipstick Jungle, Trading Up, Killing Monica, and Four Blondes. Sex and the City was published in 1996 and was the basis for the HBO hit series and two subsequent blockbuster movies. Lipstick Jungle became a popular TV series on NBC, as did The Carrie Diaries on the CW. Is There Still Sex and the City is currently in development as a TV series with Paramount. And Candace's new book, Rules for Being a Girl, comes out April 7th. That is tomorrow, the day we'll be recording. I am so thrilled to have you on. Welcome, Candace.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, congratulations on this book coming out tomorrow as we record. This episode will be up next week, so anybody listening to it can go out and purchase it right now. Before we start, I have to ask all my guests, what is your definition of feminism?
It's the basic one about women, all people being treated equally. But I think personally, it's really about women having dominion over our bodies, our minds, our economic circumstances, and our lives. Yes. I mean, to me, it's about women having the opportunity, like men, to sort of be a whole, active, self-actualized person in the world, where, you know, women are allowed to exercise all of our talents and abilities, not just the ones that are, you know, supposedly attached to our gender. And also, like, one of the biggest things for me is, you know, women having power over your own body. And that means so many things, but a lot of it means so you don't have to have sex with a man who you don't want to have sex with.
Amen.
Okay? Because, you know, a lot of us don't realize this, but, you know, for a long time, that was marriage. That was the marriage being set up, this and that. I mean, to me, like, that is kind of like a primary importance. It comes down to that you don't have to do anything with your body that you don't instinctually feel is the right thing to do, because you need a roof over your head, because society says that you cannot go out there and earn a living, because society says you're not even a person. And these are all things that society has, how society has defined women.
Mm-hmm. So these are all, you might say, rules for being a girl. See what I did there? That was my transition to your latest book.
Right.
So tell me about this book. It's co-written with Katie Cotugno, and it's a young adult novel. It's very contemporary, very of the moment. So can you give our audience a brief description of the story?
Well, it's about what happens when a regular girl really becomes prey for a predatory teacher. And, you know, there are a lot of other ways to describe the story as well. You know, it's about a girl finding feminism and finding her power. And it is all those things. And it's also about a high school girl who she thinks she's got it all together and she thinks she knows what her life is going to look like. And then again, because of this predatory teacher, like her whole life kind of falls apart. And to me, it's really an examination of a certain kind of heterosexual power structure that we see repeated again and again and again in all different areas of life. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like we're looking at like a, you know, the DNA of this kind of predatory male behavior. And then we're seeing it play out in a way that is very real. You know, when he doesn't get what he wants and, you know, he's in danger of maybe being caught or something, he retaliates. And he retaliates big.
Yeah, he plays real dirty.
He plays real dirty. And this is one of the things that we see with like the Harvey Weinstein situation. Those women said no. It was like, okay, that's not enough. It's like, I'm going to ruin your career.
Yeah.
So that's to me what makes this so important to talk about. This is not just like, oh, these are missed cues or, you know, or maybe she was asking for it or something. No, this is something that is, it's completely different. You know, it's a pattern and
a clear violation of power.
Yes, exactly. And I think because it's so threaded amongst other things that women are told about romance and relationships, it's really easy for that like poisonous thread to end up like being in that fabric. And before you know it, you're like, ah!
Yeah. So we see this teacher kind of weave his way into her life, essentially grooming her for assault. Let's call a spade here. He attempts to sexually assault her.
Right.
And
if she had, and if anything more had happened, you know what would have happened? He would have tried to go further.
Yes. Yes.
The next time. Because that's what happens.
Yes. Yes. And so what I think was so refreshing, honest, it sounds weird to say that word, refreshing, but stick with me, about this storyline is how genuine Marin, the main character, how genuine her reaction to it is, in that she's really broken, but she doesn't know how to process it. And I'm struck by, you know, she doesn't ask for help. She tries to downplay the issue to herself that maybe it wasn't that big of a deal. Maybe I did lead him on. Maybe she's trying to make all of these excuses for him because those are the rules that she's been taught.
Yes, exactly. And I have to say, Katie, my co-writer, worked a lot on those beats, getting them exactly right. And she did a fantastic job because it's exactly what you feel. At first, you're like kind of confused. You're like, you tell your best friend. She's like, oh, I think you misinterpreted it. Because you would think, oh, I misinterpreted it. And then every step of it. And then like when she gets really mad at her boyfriend in the cafeteria, when she's just like done. And then they're all like, what's wrong with you? And you know, it makes me think back. I've had experiences like in college that, you know, with guys like Bex, these guys are everywhere. And it does make you angry. It really makes you angry, like deep down at men, because it's so disrespectful in a way to you as a person. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So anyway, I have to agree with you, and you know, that was something that Katie worked so really hard on and just really got all of those beats right. So you just go, like, you're just right with her in the story, and you're thinking the same thing she is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did I misinterpret this? And what it ultimately becomes is, it's not necessarily a Me Too story, even though it is. It's really, to me, a feminist awakening story, in that she experiences this, but that's the click moment that the rules for her are very different than the rules for her boyfriend or her teacher or the principal, who's also a dude. Mm-hmm. So tell me about your feminist awakening. What was your, did you have a similar click moment?
Well, mine would have been when I was very young. I mean, honestly, probably when I was 4, because I had 2 younger sisters, no boys. And my father kind of thought that other men were assholes. You know, my father was like, sports, those knucklehead sports guys. He was like, eh. But I remember, like, so when I first went to kindergarten, I was 4. And it was just so clear. This was back in the 60s. I mean, there was such a line between boys and girls. Everything was split down the middle, and you had these things and the boys had those things, and you could not cross the line. And I somehow knew that this was wrong, and I was also like really resentful and pissed off about it. And the other thing is, my sisters and I were all really small, and we just got picked on a lot. So we really had to tell boys off. And I mean, my sister, I mean, she could make like a big jock cry. I mean, thank God. So, but it was really pretty early on that I was like, there is something seriously wrong, because everything they're saying about little girls, like, I don't feel that way.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I was like, I don't feel sugar and spice and everything nice today. I'm sorry. I'm 4, but I don't.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it was like, I want to play on the swing, you know, do the stuff that guys want to do. So, and it was kind of the beginning of like the 60s feminism. So that was, I guess, in a way, it was on the news and the TV in the background. But I mean, people were really like afraid of feminists but I don't know. I was one. Yeah. I was like born one.
Yeah. That's so unusual and so nice to hear. What do you think has changed in the feminist movement since then? Because you talk about the 60s and, you know, the civil rights movement was, I think we look back on it and say, wow, it was this groundbreaking, huge thing. And everybody that was on one side was all together, and everybody was on the other side was all together. And that's how progress happens. You know, but it's not. It's not like that.
I mean, feminism, honestly, it is, I feel like we've probably had the longest extended period of feminism ever in the history of the world. I mean, if you kind of want to say, like, maybe it started in the 70s, women could have their own credit cards. But just the idea of feminism existing and being a thing, and women being able to work outside the home, make their own living, buy their own house. I mean, that is a widespread phenomenon, or even vote. I mean, we're talking about 120 years. So in a way, we're living in the time of, you know, it's the most extended feminism, but it's something that, because women are so bound by the economic realities of their lives, which have traditionally been that you will get your goods and services through men.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot go out there and make your own money and buy your own house and have your own life and define your own life. You cannot do that. Everything you do must be done through a man. So that automatically puts women into a certain, you know, situation, you know, makes, you know, for a lot of women, it doesn't make economic sense for them to, in a sense, bite the hand that's literally feeding them.
Right. Right.
You know, I mean, that's the problem.
Right.
So you have to try to work these things together. And like education is such a huge part of it. I mean, there's been an explosion of education for women around the world. There has been. And I mean, to me, it's like feminism is the scary thing is how quickly it can be taken away.
Yeah.
That is what is to me the most dangerous part of it. And I look at the time from, I mean, I feel like it was like, maybe it was 1998 to 2008, a boom time.
Mm-hmm.
It was a time where if you said you were a feminist, I mean, people were like, we don't need feminists anymore.
I remember getting called a feminist like it was a bad thing.
Yeah. And like, if you're a feminist, it's really, really bad. And like, what's wrong with you?
Exactly.
Haven't you been able to turn yourself into a bridezilla? Because that's the biggest show on TV right now. Don't you get it? And what happens is, you know, we lost a lot of traction on Roe versus Wade.
Yeah.
In that time. Then, you know, there's an economic downturn. And when there's an economic downturn, that's when, you know, things like feminism, et cetera, tend to rise a bit because it's like, well, now we can't rely on that model of the men taking care of us because the men are losing their jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the women have to take care of themselves and maybe their family and maybe the man.
Yep.
So then you see a rise in feminism. And I mean, to me, I mean, I think that feminism will only increase, I would think, as time goes on.
I hope so. I hope so. Well, I want to shift gears just slightly because this is a co-written book, and I'm so curious about the process of that. Did you reach out to Katie? Did someone say these two writers need to get together and write a book? How did that begin?
Well, I mean, what happened was I wrote The Carrie Diaries and Summer in the City for Alessandra Balzar at Balzar and Bray. And those were published in, I think, like 2010, 2011. And then I was had a contract to do another book with her. But then I started doing like a couple of other books and then time passed. But I was always, you know, talking to Alessandra, what about this idea? What about that idea? And then she would send me, you know, books from some of their authors. And I always loved Katie's books. And it just kind of came up. It was like, I mean, it had been a while since we first talked about that, another book. It'd probably been like 6 years. So it's like times change and all of that. So then, I don't know, it just sort of came up that maybe this would be a good thing. And I was like, yes, you know, it would be great because I love Katie. Mm-hmm. And I read all of her books. It's a more structured process. Because it's like, you know, it's like you do an outline first because it's like a couple of people are going to be working on it. You work more closely with your editor. It's like nobody's going to go off and do something that's like, and then come back and people are like, what the fuck?
You know? Right.
So it's probably more structured and it's more like writing a TV script where you go back and forth, you send some pages, the other person sends some pages, you make some notes, and then, and it honestly, it takes a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of, like, you know, we worked a lot on the outline, and I mean, there's certain things where that I, if I'm writing like by myself, like right now I'm writing something, I don't use an outline. I never use an outline. But you can only do that if you're in your own head. Like,
right, you can't crawl up into her brain.
Plug somebody else's brain into your brain. It's just not going to happen. So
not yet, at least, maybe in the future.
Exactly. And then she came to New York a couple times. So, and it was good. And she's great. And she's super talented. So, I mean, I was thrilled to do a book with her.
Yeah.
And, you know, and she knows like more of the teenage stuff than I do.
No, honestly, that was one of my questions was actually, like, how did you get into the heads of these teenagers? Because much like my own experience.
Katie does it all the time. I mean, she's got another book coming out in June or July. So she's always doing like young adult. And, you know, so she's always like big on the teen stuff. So I was like, I gotta rely on her because otherwise I get everything wrong.
Well, it was really well done. So it sounds like what's sort of looking for?
Collaboration.
Yes, you collaborated correctly and divvied up the work in the way that it needed to be divvied up. So what has been the like biggest learning experience from co-writing a book too? Because I feel like that's a very different experience than writing solo, like you said.
You know, it is a different experience and it's one where it's like you just kind of have to go with it. You know what I'm saying? And it is a different experience than, you know, if I'm just writing and I'm just totally like into my head. And you really have to like listen to other people. And, you know, let everybody bring their experiences into it. You know, it's like both people have to emotionally connect with it. And that's true when you're in a writer's room as well. You know, you have all these different writers. Everybody has to emotionally connect to it in some way through some version, usually, of something like this happened to them. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like listening and exploring. You know, in that way. And I think that, you know, it worked out really well.
Yeah. I'm so glad you went there with everybody has to be emotionally attached to the story and the narrative. And because I feel like this book, Rules for Being a Girl, is so important and so timely. And one of those that I wish I had had at 14.
You know, actually, I wish I had as well.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, why do you think it's so important for young women and teenage girls?
You know, it really is because it's like, it's almost a time like nobody really believes you in a sense. I don't know exactly, but it's like this weird, awful shit is happening. And it's also kind of changing your worldview. You know, they've done all these studies about how women lose their confidence around 13 or 14.
Yeah.
You know, when they suddenly have pressure put on them to become women, to become sexual creatures, to become attractive to men and this and that. These kinds of experiences, they really could make you lose your self-confidence or they can inspire you to which is what it should do, is to say, you know what? F that.
Yeah.
Because here's my feeling. I don't need that guy.
Yeah.
To get ahead. Okay? It's like, dude, you think you're gonna mess with me? No. Because I've got the talent inside. I've got the chops. And maybe you don't know it. But someday, as what's her name once said, I'm going to be here and you're going to be here.
Oh, and what I love is that Marin, your main character, it did inspire her. And one of the way yes. that she channeled that was, I would be remiss to not bring it up, but she creates a feminist book club.
Yes, exactly.
Which obviously I love. And it creates this community for her that is unexpected, but so necessary at the time. And she's not necessarily sharing her experiences with this community, but she's using that to be really humble and to learn from them. What do you think this space especially did for your main character, Marin?
Well, you know, my feeling is that it's really about people being real, you know, and not being bullshit.
Yeah.
And often, you know, the people who are real and not bullshit are the ones that people are like, oh, they're kind of weird, they're the nerd, or, you know, or they're the ones that are in the feminist book club.
It's yes.
Like, but she, you know what? It's like she finds people who are real and who like her for who she is, and she doesn't have to be look the same as them on the outside. Marin's been in a world, that cheerleader world, where it's all about looking a certain way and fitting in, right? And suppressing what you really think because yes. you want to fit in. So when she, all this stuff happens and she leaves that world, she finds people who are real, who are in some way, you know, soulmates in a sense.
Yeah.
And that gives her strength then to go back into, you know, her old world in a sense, in a new way.
Yeah. I think it really does speak to the power of community and of being seen, and even the triumph of sisterhood to wrap the whole thing up is we do more when we stand together than when we stand alone.
Yes. I mean, that is very true. Mm-hmm. And that is the tricky thing about feminism.
It is. It is. We want to make it an individual thing, but it is a collective.
And I don't know. I feel like part of it might be that women feel like they've had to go along with what men have said and wanted for so long that they just want a place where can I just be me? Yeah. Can we maybe not all have to agree and be okay about it? Can we just, you know, be ourselves?
That's feminism. Amen. Well, we are almost through with our time. This has absolutely flown by and has been such a joy for me. And I have just a final couple questions to wrap us up. The first is, do you have a book to recommend that's not one of your own that our audience might want to check out? If they like this, what else should they read?
You know, I will end up recommending a classic.
Let's do it.
And that would be Age of Innocence.
Ah!
Julie Bart. So I think it's Age of Innocence by Edith Wharton, starring Lily Bart.
Yes.
So Lily Bart is a character who she never got any of this right. Okay. She was very beautiful, but she never got any of it right. And she ends up, you know, but it really examines, you know, again, it examines stereotypical heterosexual gender roles. And yeah. I mean, to me, it's always important that we understand these roles, how they've affected us, you know, where they've come from, what they used to look like, and how we can change these things in the future.
So from Edith Wharton to Candace Bushnell, the rules for being a girl have changed slightly, but they haven't gotten much better.
Well, actually, you know, they have gotten a lot better,
yes.
I think. I mean, for some women,
yes,
things have gotten better.
Exactly.
And, you know, the trick is, you know, there's still plenty of women out there who really need help.
Yes. For white women, things have gotten better. For women of color, we've got a lot of progress still to make. So that is a great recommendation. We don't often hear the classics recommended on the show, so I really appreciate that one to revisit. And then the final question is, where can we find you online if we want to learn more about your work? For those of you who are not familiar with it.
Well, I have a website, www.candacebushnell.com. And I do have a Twitter, which that's just Candace Bushnell, and Instagram. And I always am looking for more Instagram followers.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of this. We'll leave links to all of your social media in the show notes, links to the book in the show notes, links to Edith Wharton in the show notes. It'll be chock full of everything. Thank you so much for joining me today. This has been an absolute pleasure.
Great. Thank you, Renee.
Thanks for listening to today's show. As always, a rating and review in the podcast app of your choice goes a long way in supporting feminist media. We'd love to have you join the Feminist Book Club subscription box, a community-driven subscription box which features a book of the month and products from women and queer-owned businesses delivered directly to your doorstep. This is an easy way to vote with your dollars, as you'll be supporting this podcast, small women and queer-owned businesses, and the charity beneficiary of the month, which receives 5% of total sales. Use code PODCAST for a discount on any subscription package. Learn more about the box and get the show notes for today's episode at feministbookclub.com. See you next time.
A well-read woman is a dangerous creature.